It's the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio, 34 minutes past the hour. Thanks for joining us. Joining us now is Charlie Savage. He's the Pulitzer Prize-winning legal correspondent for the Boston Globe. He's also the author of Takeover, The Return of the Imperial Presidency and the Subversion of American Democracy. Charlie Savage joins us live from Washington today to talk about the latest Bush administration signing statement. Charlie, thanks very much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me on again.
Remind us what a signing statement is.
Sure. A signing statement is a set of instructions to the executive branch that a president issues on the day he signs a bill into law. It basically lays out his interpretation of the laws created by a piece of legislation, and it orders everyone else in the government to interpret the laws the same way. And where this gets controversial is where the president says, in my view, these certain laws are unconstitutional, and so that means we don't need to enforce them or obey them if they apply to us.
Because that's essentially, in the Constitution, it says that the Congress shall make the laws, and the president's choice is essentially to either sign them or veto them. But by him saying certain elements of this law I view to be in conflict with my constitutional responsibilities, and so therefore they will not be enforced, it's undercutting the Congress's ability to make the laws and essentially kind of creating a weird form of line item veto of the president.
That's what the critics of the practice say. This used to be a very rare thing, and under President Bush, it's become a routine, frequent tool. He's attached signing statements to about 160 bills. Cumulatively, he's now challenged about 1,100 statutes created by those 150 bills, which is now pushing more than twice all previous presidents combined as far as the number of laws challenged. And so the critics of it will say this is evolving to kind of a backdoor line item veto that Congress has no chance to override. It's kind of a loophole that presidents have figured out, and now more than any predecessor, or really all predecessors combined, President Bush has thrown open the throttle on using that to advance his own powers.
And you really, the reason that you won the Pulitzer was because of your reporting on Bush's use of signing statements, the quantitative difference, and really, ultimately, the qualitative difference between Bush and other presidents on use of this tool and its implications. And you kind of blew that open in 2006 and through 2007. Did the president change the frequency with which he was issuing signing statements after your reporting kind of drug this into the light, after this became a national story? Did anything about his signing statements, either in terms of their number or their tone, change at all?
Well, I'm not sure about that my reporting had anything to do with it in 2006, but it appeared that the 2006 election and then the arrival of a Democratic-controlled Congress in the beginning of 2007 changed things initially. Bush did not issue any signing statements once the Democrats took over Congress until basically the very end of 2007. There was this long gap in which he just didn't do any at all. Now, of course, one reason for that might have been that the Democrats weren't passing a lot of very substantive legislation at first. There's more than one factor in play here. But it was a very long gap. And then when he did start issuing signing statements again at the end of last year, they initially seemed to be much more moderate in tone. He wasn't going off on these long rants about the unitary executive theory, and there wasn't any really aggressive kind of law that he was attacking, anything akin to like the torture ban or the oversight provisions that had been added to the Patriot Act, things that were really going to make people's jaw drop. Until Monday,
when as he's heading out the door of his office to go give the State of the Union, he drops like a complete doozy of a signing statement. Now, what was the law, the bill for which he passed, he issued this signing statement? This was the Defense Authorization Bill?
This was the 2008 National Defense Authorization Bill. That's right.
And what were the portions of it that he objected to in the signing statement?
He said that there were a number of provisions that he objected to, but then he specifically named four. One of them had to do with giving greater whistleblower protection to employees of contractors, Blackwater, say. One of them set up a national commission to study problems with wartime contracting, be it on, you know, mismanagement and waste on the sort of Halliburton side, or excessive force incidents on the Blackwater side of the kind of contractors we have now. There's another one that wasn't that it had something to do with providing information about intelligence documents to the heads of the Armed Service Committees. But the one that was really the most interesting of all was a section that said, you shall not spend money. It is forbidden to spend federal money to establish permanent bases in Iraq or to exercise American control over Iraq's oil resources.
That was the language that was in the bill that was passed by Congress, and Bush in his signing statements pointed out those specific provisions as things that he didn't plan on following.
All these things that he said, that what Congress had to say about such matters was irrelevant. He would do what he pleased in these areas because, in his opinion, they had no constitutional power to prevent him from doing these things, including establishing permanent bases in Iraq, which is an issue that is extremely pertinent right now because he is negotiating with the government of Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki sort of a major sweeping agreement that's going to include military bases and security commitments on behalf of the United States and debt forgiveness and economic ties and all kinds of things. And he's said that he's not going to submit this agreement to Congress. He's going to just do it unilaterally, commit the United States to something. And there's been a lot of worry and suspicion that, number one, well, he can't do that without submitting it to Congress. You can't just call a treaty by another name and get out of the need to have it ratified. But beyond that, that he might commit the United States to some kind of permanent security basing situation that would make the next president, 11 months from now, if that president wants to pull out of Iraq more quickly or otherwise change the policy, have trouble doing that because the United States would be breaking its word if that happened. And so by Congress saying, you shall not spend money to establish permanent bases in Iraq, and Bush saying, I will if I want to, it just sort of inflamed the suspicions surrounding those very high-profile negotiations that are going on right now.
And in addition, I mean, the insult that's added to the injury of Bush planning on making this agreement with Iraq without bringing it to the U.S. Congress, as you say, you know, it being a treaty, which, of course, requires congressional ratification, but him calling it some other thing so that he doesn't have to have it ratified by Congress, the insult that is added to that injury is that on the Iraqi side, they are going to submit it to the Iraqi parliament. But in the United States, it's not going to be submitted to the equivalent body, which would be the U.S. Congress, which is just it's like, you know, not just kicking somebody when they're down, but, you know, but grinding your heel into them while you're at it. It's just
I would say there is some delicious irony there.
Well, it's just, I mean, here's how I see this as a political observer. I think it's really, really interesting that over the course of 2007 with the new Democratic Congress, as you say, There were no signing statements, really. There was this long gap until the very end of the year. And when he did start up with the signing statements again, they were relatively non-controversial compared with his other signing statements of the past. And now we're in the new year, and now we're gearing up in terms of the presidential election. We've got Bush doing Republican Party fundraisers one after the other. Every time he leaves the White House now, he's doing Republican Party fundraisers. And all of a sudden, what we've got is this negotiation that he wants to make with the Iraqi government in terms of our permanent presence there. And we've got the most inflammatory possible signing statement here. It just seems to me like, let's just put this in the arena. Let's fight over this. Let's put Republicans in favor of this and Democrats against it. And we think Republicans will look strong if they stand up for something like this. It feels to me like a deliberate provocation.
That's assuming people even pay attention, you know. Of course, one thing about the signing statement, as you said, was it was issued right as he was walking out the door to the State of the Union. No one was paying attention. This is sort of part of that pattern of doing things late at night on a Friday, or, you know, the famous torture ban signing statement was not only late at night on a Friday, but a Friday before New Year's Eve weekend when none of the Washington Press Corps was even in town. Not that we've done that good of a job covering signing statements in general over the previous years. But, you know, right now, for the next year, all of the attention on national news and the, you know, people who cover politics for a living is going to be focused on the 2008 presidential election and Hillary and Obama and McCain and Clinton. And, you know, it's not going to be I think it's going to create this environment in which there's going to be a lot of interesting things happening for the last year of the Bush administration that maybe even less attention than before is going to be put on them, and they're going to be in a great opportunity to sort of lock down things that they've been trying to do this whole time. It's going to be very important to pay attention to what they're doing, including with these negotiations with Iraq.
I guess that's the two sides of the coin. They're either doing this in which I feel like is this is the cartoon that I would invent for the kind of thing they'd use a signing statement for in terms of being the most provocative, outrageous, you know, get up in arms, a combination of issue and approach. And so it could be that it's a provocation and they think this is a winning issue for Republicans to fight on. And it could just be that they're pretty sure that nobody's going to report on this at all. And so it's not a provocation. It's invisible.
Yeah, the thing about it is I'm almost on the leaning towards the first thing you said, where it's just, you know, let's just be provocative for the purpose of it. Because when you think about it, a law that says you shall not spend money to establish permanent bases in Iraq is easily circumnavigatable. All you have to do is say, this is not a permanent base. We signed a 400-year lease, but that's only 400 years. That's not permanent. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's such an empty threat, that kind of a law anyway, that to attack it seems unnecessary almost.
Yeah, unless you want it to be a point of political provocation. Yeah. Charlie, let me ask you one last question, and you and I have talked about this before, but I wonder if when we start talking about how this factors into Democratic versus Republican politics, both congressionally and in the presidential race, is there anything that Congress can do to either rescind these when President Bush is gone? Can the next president rescind these when President Bush is gone? Or could the Congress block Bush from doing these things now? How is it possible to fight back against these things?
It's interesting, you know, Congress has all kinds of tools. They can hold oversight hearings, and they've been started doing that now. They're big, you know, they can cut off funds for things, but, you know, this law was styled as cutting off funds for the, you know, establishment of permanent bases, and Bush is saying, well, I don't recognize your ability to cut off funds for something like that, so maybe that doesn't work either. Of course, the biggest tool of Congress's arsenal, in theory, is impeachment when all else fails, but of course that's not going to happen for political reasons and beyond. You know, as we get closer and closer to January 20th, 2009, even in theory it fades away as something that could even be done, which sort of liberates the White House from really having to fear Congress at all, since Vice President Cheney's not running for president. No one in the White House is going to face this sort of accountability moment, as one law professor put it to me. And so I think that they don't have a lot to fear from Congress, even in the abstract, and then in the behavior of Congress in sort of going along or not fighting back very strenuously too now shows that
they were right.
there's nothing there, really.
There's nothing there for them to be afraid of. Well, I'll see what I can do about changing that. I'm not sure what I can do, but it sure makes me mad. Charlie Savage, thanks for your reporting on this, and thanks for joining us to talk about it today. It's incredibly important. I do feel like there is an undercurrent of outrage among people who are finding out about this story. I think this is going to be one of those signing statements that lives on and becomes more famous over time rather than less. So let's hope so. Thanks, Charlie. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
Charlie Savage, legal correspondent for the Boston Globe, is the author of Takeover, The Return of the Imperial Presidency and the Subversion of American Democracy. Charlie Savage, of course, won the Pulitzer Prize for his reporting on the phenomenon of Bush administration signing statements. At this point in the Bush presidency, it feels like, you know, it's like he's the bad kid at a private school, but it's a private school that his family owns. You know, like, his family owns the private school, so the principal could theoretically call him in and discipline him for something. But, you know, as long as his family can just fire the principal at any moment, he doesn't really have much to fear. You can't just tell Congress, I don't recognize your ability to tell me what to do or oversee my actions. You just can't do that if we're a country that purportedly is under the rule of law. 48 minutes past the hour.